Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Hendrix Ocampo, CEO and co-founder of Greenpoint. With extensive experience in corporate finance, accounting, tax, and financial modeling, Hendrix has been a key finance and strategy advisor for various companies. He has worked across industries like infrastructure, real estate, and consumer goods. Besides leading Greenpoint, Hendrix is the finance head of 88 Glass and Aluminum Works, and he's also held roles at Macquarie Group and Morningside Capital Partners. A certified public accountant, Hendrix holds degrees from the University of Santo Tomas and Chai Sheck College. I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and insights into the world of finance. So, Hendrix, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. So how did you get started in this? You're in finance, you're running your own company. Is this because you come from a family of entrepreneurs?
No, none of my relatives are entrepreneurs. You know what? I really loved dancing and singing before when I was in grade school and up until high school, even college, I actually dreamt of being an artist someday. Yeah, because that's what I loved doing before.
Right.
And when I was in college, I applied for mass communication because that's the usual route for people who want to go into media. But my grandfather, who was paying for my tuition, got mad at me because he said he wants an accountant in the family. So, okay, I have to abide to you because you're the one paying for my tuition fees.
Right.
But eventually, I loved finance and accounting.
So it was something that was imposed upon you, but you learned to love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you went to school, you got your thing, you hopped out, and what, you just hung up your flag and started working for yourself? How, it was just sunshine and rainbows, money raining from the sky, or how did things go?
No, not really. After I graduated, I worked on an investment banking company. The reason being is because I want to be an investment banker because it sounds cool back then. And especially, it's not that famous here in the Philippines that when you hear people that you're working as an investment banker, they don't know about it. And like when you're in America, in the US, when you hear about investment bankers, you think about Wall Street, right? There's nothing like that here in the Philippines. So I want to be like that when it comes to my profession. But I was assigned to this, I was assigned to various companies as a support for fractional CFOs. And then there, I realized that the SME market here in the Philippines need help when it comes to finance and accounting. It's maybe one of the reasons why, because they can't grow their business. It's hard for them to measure their finances. They don't understand their financial statements. Hence comes in Greenpoint. It's one of the reasons why I started Greenpoint. I want to bring in the finance practice and discipline that I learned throughout my career to the SME market. Because it's hard for them to get access to these good finance professionals because it's not cheap, it's expensive.
Right. Can you speak to that a little bit? I think what's interesting is for some people already know it. They already drink in your Kool-Aid. They get it 100%. Other people are so busy just trying to keep the lights on, meet payroll every month. What do they need help with finances for? They just got to get the money through the door. That's what I think a lot of people might believe.
Yeah, they need help with their finance operations, optimizing it and making sure that it's robust. What I mean by that, there are a lot of business owners in the Philippines. I'll give you an example. There are a lot of business owners here in the Philippines that mix their own personal funds with the personal fund with the funds of the business. That's a big no, right? But you'd be surprised. There are a lot of business owners who are doing that.
So 80% of business owners do that.
Yeah, it's basic cash management and internal controls, but doesn't necessarily mean they're doing it. It means that they're doing it because they want to siphon money in the from the business, but that's not it. They just don't know how to do it properly. That's why before we come in as your accounting team or your source accounting team, we try to help them first optimize their finance process and operations. We give them tips on how to properly manage their cash, set up their own bank accounts. I also learned this from eMyth Revisited that you have to set up different bank accounts, right? Your profit
Right.
bank account, your tax bank account. We have the checklist before we come in to our clients. Because it doesn't make sense for you to come in as accountant, but the finance operation is it's a bit
a
of a
mess.
Failure,
Yeah.
right? It's a mess. The supporting documents that you'll be getting from them are most likely incomplete and not of good quality and not compliant, right? So yeah, we help their cash management process. Not just that, we also give them tips on how to do pricing templates, basic forecasting, the things that needs to be existing at a bare minimum in the finance department. Then we come in as an accountant. Actually, we have that kind of service. I haven't seen any kind of service like that in the Philippines. We call it FIRST, Finance Essentials Review Services. We have a checklist. So it's like diagnosing first the business, then you send them the list of the things that may be of risk. And if they don't do anything about it, we are going to tell them the consequences, but we also give them the recommendations, right?
I love that because I think that's an important thing. There's a saying, a lot of people think, oh, I'll worry about my finances once I've got enough money. But the important thing is to handle it when the numbers are small. You got to handle it, manage it when the numbers are small. You think of it as a bucket. It's like saying, when I have a bigger bucket of water, I'll worry about plugging the holes.
That's true.
And the reality is, if you just have a solid bucket to begin with, it'll make your life way easier. If your house is on fire and you're trying to throw buckets of water on it and it's got all these holes in it, that's what you're working against it. And I think that's a really important thing. The other part is, so obviously you have your finances and how you manage your cash. There's also the indicators, the lagging and leading indicators that you get in terms of what's working, what's not working. I was so shocked when I lived in Japan. I lived there for 2 years, and I wonder if I have one around, but I was in the stationery stores. They had these little like cash books, like a ledger, but it would fit in your pocket.
Oh, wow.
Like a little pen to go with it. So you could, this is like early days of internet. I think Skype was revolutionary there. Video calls was like, wow, I'd been paying $100 a month in long distance cards to call my family back home. And then Skype came out and then I could just call them for free video chat. This is like that. But you get this little, I swear I have a bunch laying around here somewhere. But because I went to Japan last year, and I bought a dozen of them. But I was so shocked because I started tracking what I spent as I spent it. Just this little book. Oh, this is my cash for the day. And I spent this much for the subway. And I bought a drink here. And I bought my lunch here. And I was trying. And I was so shocked. I was spending like $3 a day on chocolate bars. And let alone from the health issues, I just thought that is way too much money for me to be spending $3 a day. That's like $100 a month on chocolate. I don't need that much chocolate. I don't need to spend $100. Because again, anyways, I was in my early 20s. I was like 22 or something then. Anyway, I was just so shocked. And so the moral of that story is business owners are so busy doing and they're not necessarily paying attention. They might be shocked to see where a lot of their money is going.
Yeah, that's why we're called biological being. We're not logical beings.
Oh, we tend to I like
be
swayed
by our emotions, right? If that's the case, then even rich people would not be in debt. But they are. They
right.
are. It's just basic cash management. In finance, there's more a lot to it. But finance is more influenced by our behavior rather than spreadsheets, etc.
Right. It's not what you make, it's what you keep. That gap. I know exactly what you're talking about. I have a friend who's a financial planner, and they say the number, they when they first got started in the business, they'd be really excited when somebody pulls up in like a fancy car and they look good and he looked good. And he's, oh, we're going to be getting into some money today. And then they'd look at the books and they'd be like, they're broke. Like they make a lot of money, but they spend more than they're making. Like they're broke. He's like, then you get the person that's coming in and they're just like plain clothes. They got a car that's beat up and that they've been driving for 15 years. And you open the books and they've got like millions stowed away cash in the bank. And it's that you can't judge a book by its cover type thing. And the real secret is that gap between what you make and what you keep. And especially even as a business owner, what you keep beyond what you pay yourself. Like I know a lot of business owners, they don't even have a concept of runway. What's runway? What's a runway and why is it important?
Sorry, is that your question for me?
Yeah, what's a financial runway and why is it important for a business?
Runway is the amount of money you can spend, right? Given the X number of months, weeks, months, even years. That's how long is your business going to survive. It's very important because without cash, your business dies.
Yeah, I don't know if
There's
anyone heard that.
Nothing too fancy about it, but...
No, but it's not fancy, but it's one of those things that, man, imagine he just said how many weeks, months, or years your business has enough cash to continue to run. Imagine for the people listening, imagine that everything in your business stopped today. For whatever reason, you couldn't collect a single dollar more. How many years could your business continue to operate to try to fix that problem before you crashed and burned? That's your runway. Most people have no idea what runway is. And
That's
that's
true.
just a good example of good, solid financial diligence. Anyhow, can we talk
That's
about
true.
different types of assets that a business can invest in? I think also a lot of people maybe might not understand. I have my own opinions on this. I've done research, but in terms of an asset, reinvesting funds. So if there is a surplus, and this isn't, I know you're not necessarily, well, I'm going to shut up.
It's okay.
Yeah, like in terms of assets. So you've got your staff you pay for, business, let's say it has a cash surplus. What are typically some asset categories or ideas where it would be good to invest some of those dollars or save up to invest dollars?
Okay, good question. It depends on what type of business you're running to, right? What industry are you in? But if you're in a stage wherein your business is mature enough that having excess funds would be reinvesting funds in the company would not give you that returns that you're looking for. If I were the CFO and it's being run, I mean, your key asset are your employees, I'd rather give it to most of my employees than a portion of it to my shareholders. But if your business is still growing, you know what? What I'll do is I'll have my team come up with lots of ideas. Then I'm going to compute the net present value of each ideas. I'm not going to compute IRR. I'm going to compute NPV. Then yeah, I just go for it. But if you're also not into reinvesting your funds into your business as part of making sure that your sales grows, what I would do is invest if it depends on your risk appetite, right? So if the CFO or the CEO's decision is to invest it on the more not so aggressive funds, they can put it into term deposits just to ensure that it won't beat the inflation, but the cost of money gets reduced. Now, if they're into more aggressive type of investments, Michael Saylor, right? They most of their surplus, they put it into Bitcoin because if you study the asset, it's the best performing asset in the last few years. Actually, 10 to 15 years, the 100 to 200% year-on-year growth. You can put it there. Park it there.
Yeah, I'm pro
That's my
Bitcoin.
opinion.
I'm pro Bitcoin because I'm anti-government interfering in my business, preventing me from sending money to people and politicians being able to print money and spend it and me have to pay that back. I'm against all that stuff. And Bitcoin is a solution. For people that don't know, Bitcoin is a solution to that. Even with gold, there's actually, people don't realize there's actually massive gold mines. And in some instances, governments have restricted how much new gold can be brought on ledger,
Also
so to
don't
speak,
believe.
because they don't want to disrupt the value of it too much. And
Correct.
so gold is not as scarce as people think and believe it to be.
I totally
I
agree.
think silver, I believe, I might be wrong, but I believe silver is more scarce than gold. I might be wrong on that, but I remember reading that sort of thing. Whereas with Bitcoin, there's only ever going to be 21 million, period. So
Correct.
that's, and no one can shut down your account. You don't need an ID to open an account. All you need is just like an interface, whether it's a web browser or something, to open an account. Now, the drawback is that there's no way to recover your account if you lose your PIN number and your account code, so to speak. I'm speaking in relative terms. You get a seed phrase and account number, basically. And the seed phrase is 12 words in a specific order. And you have to remember all 12 words and what order they go in.
That's true.
Otherwise, you can't access your funds. And there's no one that can help you with that because it's encrypted. So that's the pro
Course.
and the con
Course.
thing. Now, I'm on a bit of a rant here, but what you said, I heard you say a couple of things. First, just capital intensity and financial management in terms of where you keep the money, where are you putting it, so that way. A lot of people don't realize, but the money in their bank account is losing value. Like it's
That's true.
got politician. What am I trying to say? My personal opinion, I'm impressed with this, is that thinking a politician is there to help you is like believing the stripper really likes you at the dance club. I think it's that sort of a relationship. And so the money in your bank account, if you don't do anything with it, just at face value, it will have lower purchasing power in a year or so. So
Totally agree.
you have to earn above what you pay for tax, and you have to earn above what you're losing to inflation, because the value of your money is being made less every second of every day. And we're way too smart to continue to do this nonsense. So I spent a bunch of money to do a bunch of research, and I uncovered eight critical success factors for success in small and medium-sized businesses. And they were self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. Business intelligence are the feedback loops, the dashboards, connecting
Spot
activity to performance and results. It's the mirror that you hold up that tells you how you're being perceived by the world and how you're doing, the objective truth, just like monitoring your blood pressure, your heart rate, your body fat percentage, how much your body weighs, that sort of thing. And then we drilled into each of them. And then the money management one has six pillars: leanness, low capital investment, debt free, ideally,
Ideally.
R&D spending, high quality products and services, asset and sales growth, and then capacity utilization. So what you're talking about was capacity utilization, getting all that you can from what you've got. So that's resource acquisition and management, employee capacity training, investing in your staff, in your labor productivity, in the labor intensity, and then capital intensity, financial management we talked about. You also hinted at something, and I wanted to go into that a bit deeper. You said invest in growing sales. And that's actually a whole category that we found that related to success in for businesses is was investing in assets and sales growth. Things like sales teams or sales assets, real estate, if you can buy versus rent the property that you're on, or McDonald's. Ray Kroc at one point says he's not in the burger business, he's in the real estate business location. So for them, that was huge. Equipment, that's a big thing. If you develop an app, that's a form of equipment, it's a tool, software. Licensing. Those are all sorts of things. And maybe I could put patents in there. I wonder if pat would you say patent is an asset though? Is that an asset? I guess it's a protective asset, isn't it?
Oh, when you follow accounting standards, yes, it is an intangible asset.
Yeah, okay. Is there any that I didn't
But
mention?
I'd rather spend time improving my product than applying for a patent. Because if you
Right.
don't have the funds to defend your patent in a lawsuit case, right? I mean, it
True.
doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. The time, the money you have to spend, doesn't make sense.
Are there any other intangible assets outside of those? Licensing, sales teams, assets, real estate, equipment, software, development, patents. Anything else that you would add to that?
Goodwill is one. Patents, copyrights. I actually, those are the things that are top of mind.
Yeah,
But
okay. No, it's a
yeah,
good opportunity
there are a
because
lot
we
of
can.
lists when you follow accounting standards.
So, what would you recommend to someone who's starting out and struggling, trying to wrap their brain around all this finance stuff? Maybe they're just a technician. They're really good at doing what their business does, and they're having to learn all these new skills to also learn the art of business development and business building. What would you recommend to them?
Okay, so I recommend you to study accounting because there's no way to go about it. You really have to study accounting. You have to understand the jargons, the process on how do accountants produce financial statements, because eventually you'll be, I'm talking about business owners and people who are aiming for the top management. You have to review those financial statements. If you don't understand assets, liabilities, equities, items that are inside your assets, items that are inside your liabilities, items that are inside your equities. There's no way for you to understand what's going on in your business. You said earlier that it's very important to monitor progress, what happened in the past, because that's where your decision-making process come in, right? Your historical data is a valuable piece to your puzzle when it comes to decision making, making decisions in the future. And if you don't understand those financial statements, there's no way for you to move forward. As they said, you can't grow what you can't measure.
Right.
That's really true. So you better study accounting. I don't care whether you take it to court, take a course online, whether you study in the nearest university. Accounting is accounting. It depends on how much effort you're going to put into when you study it. But yeah, that's my advice for people.
I love it. I know that in a business, there's typically a finance person, a product person, or sorry, I should say a finance and operations person, a product person, and a marketing salesperson. And those are three kind of categories that you need. You need three people that are masters in those fields that have time, energy, and focus attention. But no matter who you are as the owner, if you are not involved at all in the marketing and the money management, I've never seen that end well.
That's
That's
true. Even
yeah.
those three key people or key positions that you mentioned, they also have to understand the basic finances, right? Because you can't really put in a silo into the from in inside the finance department because it affects most business process. And those people they're working with have to understand if there are any financial impacts. If obviously people from sales would understand that what
Right.
they're doing is going to grow their sales. But most people forgot that doing sales as a customer acquisition cost linked to
Right.
it. They also have to understand that. Now, if your finance department is not talking to your sales department, they're gonna go spend so much money just to make a sale, right? Even your product team, they also, I forgot what book I read, and they said that the peak of a software developer, an engineer, or any product type person or profession is when you have that skill set and you also have a good business acumen. And having a good business acumen is a person having a good understanding of finance, right?
Yeah, Naval Ravikant is the guy that I really, he's got a great, it's a free book, the Almanac of Naval Ravikant was made. His advice is great. He talks about if you can build and if you can sell. If you can build, then you can constantly innovate and try to create something useful for the world. And that's a form of, it's an asset in the sense of you can always be relevant and have something people need or want. And if you can sell, then you can always how to go and generate funds and money. And if you can build and you can sell, that's really an unstoppable combination. You talked about some metrics. I know some metrics that are really critical for the health of a business on top of cash, because cash is king. So obviously cash flow and cash reserves. For me, I feel like it's cash flow, projected actual runway, and then metrics like cost per lead, cost per sale, average order value, and lifetime customer value. So cost per lead, what does it cost you per potential client? Cost per sale, what's the true cost per sale? What's the average order value that you make per purchase? And then lifetime customer value is how much the typical customer spends with you on average. And you can put time domains on this: first day, first 7 days, 45 days, 6 months, year. And part of what that's really powerful for doing, like when I had my martial arts school, I knew that on average, someone would purchase, it was a new school, it was less than 3 years, but I knew on average, I made $818 per student. I knew that they purchased $946 because everyone gets put on a contract for a subscription. Not everyone pays. And I wasn't big about beating people up, chasing them to make the pay, like, okay, whatever. But I knew on average, people bought $946 worth of martial arts instruction, but they actually only paid for 818. And one of the things that allowed me to do was make a better offer than all my competitors, where if people joined with me, I gave them like $100 worth of free gear. And my wholesale cost of that was like 40, 50 bucks, but they paid $100 the first month. So I was still, and that's what I'm talking about before when you said people need to understand the numbers in their business. If you don't know your numbers, you can't. All my competitors thought I was crazy. They're like, Daryl's gonna go bankrupt. And I just kept growing.
Correct.
They couldn't understand it because they didn't know
Correct.
the numbers. So they're like, how
Correct.
is he surviving giving free stuff away? You can't, you have a businesses to make money, and they couldn't understand the long term of it. So would you agree with that? Anything you would add to that?
Yeah, of course. They said that cash is the lifeblood of business. If you're pulling out the blood, then your business die, right? Yeah, I totally agree on what you call this. Having a good sense of your good sense of finance measurement, especially when it comes to making decisions. I understand that you mentioned about unit economics. The customer lifetime value less your customer acquisition cost is your unit economics, right? Your customer lifetime value depends if what type of business or product you are selling. If it's a or if it's a one time if it's a one time thing, then you multiply your sale average sales price times your average order size, then that's your customer lifetime value. If it's a subscription, you look at how long does your typically clients subscribe for your services or product, then multiply to the average sales price, then less the acquisition cost. Most finance person commit mistakes in computing customer acquisition costs because it's hard for them to quantify the average salary per hour. They forget to take into account 13th month pay, government contributions, estimated bonuses, software development costs, which technically deflates or lower your customer acquisition cost. In fact, it's higher than you're supposed to be computing it, right? Then having that good sense of unit economics helps you decide whether that product or that service is doing well, especially when you take into account selling, because sometimes people just go sell and sell, but they tend to forget that their customer acquisition cost is way higher than their product. And eventually they realize this once the cash balance is already depleting. Just to also add, these are good units of measurement when it comes to e-commerce business. And for businesses that has a good accounting process, I basically look at three things. You're probably aware of this. You have to measure your liquidity always on a monthly basis. That's the things that I look at are your liquidity ratios, your current and quick ratio, your average, your cash conversion cycle, those three for liquidity, and then for profitability, your gross margins and your EBITDA margins, and then lastly your net income margins, because here in the Philippines your taxes gets to be updated frequently. That's why I always want to measure your estimated net income after, right? Then for solvency, if your business is into debt, I also want to measure the debt to equity ratio more frequently. Those things.
And I think some people, you said before, they have to get into accounting. I think what's really important for people to understand is that we can learn anything. A human, like I have a dog, and my dog is only ever going to do the handful of things my dog does. You hear about special cases where dogs learn to do tricks, but that's just a special dog. That's a human that dedicated a ton of time to cause that to happen, essentially. But humans, we can decide I want to be a ballerina, I want to learn to ice skate, I'm going to skydive, I want to learn to handstand walk. We can do all these weird, unique, crazy things. And a lot of people know about the 10,000 hour rule, which says that if you want to be world class at something, you need to dedicate 10,000 hours of practice to it to become world class. But what a lot of people don't know is that to get out of that awkward beginner phase into the intermediate bucket, it's 20 hours. So if you're trying to learn a language, that's 30 minutes a day for 40 days. It's a half hour. Like people spend more time than that on the toilet. You know what I mean? If you're trying to learn to play an instrument, if you need to learn accounting. And so any skill that you need to learn in your business, you need to it takes 20 hours. If you can put 20 hours of practice towards it, you'll get out of that awkward, clumsy, this hurt, makes my brain hurt phase and become an intermediate at it. I think
Yeah,
that's a really important
totally
thing.
agree.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing for people to know and understand. What do you feel are some of the best habits? If I'm a business owner, you mentioned one, like liquidity, looking at it monthly. Okay, so that says to me that monthly, I need to check my liquidity. What are the habits around finance that you think the most successful business owners you work with have?
Yeah, good question. So I already mentioned the good habit of monitoring your financial position, your financial performance, especially your cash position.
But is that daily? Is that weekly? That's once a month?
Monthly should be good. But for businesses who are a bit tied to their cash, it's best to measure their cash flow on a weekly basis. I would suggest do it on a 3-month rolling, but the cash flow for the monitoring of the cash flow forecast should be done at least on a weekly basis. So it means more job for your accounting people because they have to record all cash transactions on a weekly basis, right? But that's my opinion or suggestion for people who are a bit tight to cash. But if you're not a bit tight to cash, then you can move it on a monthly basis. You have to monitor your cash flow on a monthly basis, at least 3 months, because it's hard for you to forecast on a 6-month period. There are a lot of things that can happen after the 3rd month, right? I also want to encourage people to stop doing an annual planning or annual budgeting.
Quarterly
Yes,
with
it
you.
has to be quarterly. Here in the Philippines, they're still doing it annual, then they revise it mid-year because they realize, okay, I should have I we're planning to do this, but we weren't able to take into account this during the planning of the budget, right?
So much can
So
happen
I
in a
suggest
day,
do
let
it
alone a day.
quarterly.
I'm with you. I think quarterly planning, I think having 3 to 5 year goals is important and annual goals, but you plan for 12-week intervals that you break down into monthly goals that you design weekly sprints around. I think that's the real best way to approach that. Where do you see the future of all this going? Because we've got AI, we've got technological upsets. A lot of disruptive technologies coming out. We have geopolitical issues happening. There's currency wars in the sense of BRICS is trying to come out with their own reserve currency, Bitcoin, crypto, fintech. And then we've got these archaic, parasitic central bankers and their families that are trying to control everything. That's my opinion, but I encourage you to do some research. Where do you see things going in 3 to 5 years or more?
When it comes to, sorry,
Oh, your industry and accounting and managing the
okay,
finance of a
accounting.
business. Yeah. Are we all going to be doing business in Bitcoin in 3 years? Are we going to be doing CBDCs and have a social credit score attached to that? Or is AI going to handle everything and we're not going to need to worry about tracking
well,
receipts and all that?
if Trump doesn't win, if Trump wins the election, he said it's not going to implement any CBDCs. I just heard it yesterday. But yeah, when it comes to accounting and finance, if you look at the history of accounting and finance, it has always been the same, regardless of the technology. The foundation of accounting and finance, it has always been the same. There are just some improvements when it comes to accounting. I've seen the way of the people here in the Philippines. I've seen people doing accounting from books, then moving into spreadsheets, then from spreadsheets moving into accounting softwares. And I think for accounting, it's hard for you to do an A when it comes to accounting because the decision-making process has to be done by a human being. Especially here in the Philippines, you can't really automate the recording of receipts because most receipts are still handwritten, not unless you can tell that all Philippine taxpayers should produce electronic receipts, right? Then the OCR can come in, the optical recognition, right? But if you're still doing manual receipts, there's only a few ways for you to improve, right? You can either use a macro, use an RP, which has been already existing a few years before. So I don't think it'll affect much. But when it comes to finance, I've seen a lot of accounting softwares that has already, built in forecasting model into it. But my problem with that is that it only takes into account the historical data. It's still hard for machine. I don't know if there's gonna be a machine that can do a better forecast than your business owners and your finance people. But yeah, those are the things that I see. OCR for accounting, definitely a game changer because right now people are storing receipts not in your physical desk, your physical cabinets. They're also storing it in on cloud servers because they realize that shit happens, right? And if you don't have backup on these documents, it's hard for you to track, or if you get audited, it's hard for you to produce those documents.
Heaven forbid I
So
not pay the tax man every single penny owed while politicians spend billions of dollars on Nonsense. I'm sorry. Did I say that? I was the weird side.
Everyone knows about it.
Yeah,
That's the sad truth. That's
but
why I go ahead.
I was just saying, I agree with you that they said that we were going to replace the farmers when the tractors came out, that we wouldn't need farmers anymore, that robots would do it all. They said that we weren't going to need bookkeepers when calculators came out, because they used to have teams of mathematicians that used to crunch numbers. When spreadsheets came out, they said accounting was doomed because a single spreadsheet could do what a team of accountants was required to do before. And really, what I believe happened is it helped the productive people be more productive. It gave the non-productive people that hated that career, it gave them a forcing function to find a new career path. And at the end of the day, all this stuff is just tools. And so I love what you say is that the fundamentals will always be the same, but how we get, accomplish those fundamentals may change and adapt. But there's all sorts
Correct.
of nuance and variation. And I think if, for some people, they thought that, oh, like places like the Philippines are backwards because they're not completely digital and that. I'm like, that is a strength, my friend. You are looking at this and they're from the wrong point of view. But anyways, I digress. So
There's a half truth to it. There's a
right.
half truth.
There's a half
Yeah.
truth. There's a very good half truth. It's hard to put a attach a social credit score to paper trails, at least harder than digital. So this has been a great interview. We've covered some interesting topics and different things. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
None that I can think of.
And if people have questions, if they want to reach out, get in touch, if they want to learn more, what are some of the best ways for them
Yeah,
to?
you can send a message to our website, www.greenpointconsultancy.com, or you can send a personal email to me. My email is Hendricks, Hendricks dot Ocampo at greenpointconsultancy.com.
So that's Hendricks, HENDRICKS dot OCAM. That's M as in money, POCAMPO at greenpointconsultancy.com.
.com.
GREENPOINTCONSULTANCY.com.
Perfect.
Hendricks.ocampo at greenpointconsultancy.com. Go check him out. Send him a question. Get him to help dive in and clean up your buckets so you're not trying to build up 6,000 liters of money in a tiny little pail that's full of holes. Hendricks, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a really good conversation. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I, knowing you have your own direct reports, your own stuff going on. Thank you for coming and sharing with all
Thank
of
you so
us.
much for having me, Darian.
It's been an honor and a pleasure.
All right, thank you.